wanted to get a sense first of your background. Where did you grow up?
I grew up mostly in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. It's the beginning part of my childhood was New Jersey. We moved a lot. My dad was an engineer turned executive through a series of lucky breaks and opportunities, and then kept being given more opportunities to manage things, and it just seemed to make us move every couple of years. He was a man on his way up.
Now, in those early years, where did your interest in mathematics and or statistics come about?
From all over. My dad was an engineer. My dad programmed one of the first industrial IBM machines at the Bayway Refinery in northern New Jersey for Esso, and did really what we now call operations research for them. He was an engineer, but they really wanted efficiency and optimization of their systems. Right. So he programmed in assembler language. He used to bring home the cards with the punches. And of course, I asked him about it. I was the first born, so you know, he would come back and show me, and just he instilled that sense of math. I mean, I think he really was a frustrated mathematician. Not frustrated, but he had grown up poor and felt like he had to go make money. And I think he loved math, but felt like he had to do something practical. So he went off to be an engineer and go make the money.
Were you interested at all in mathematical puzzles, brain teasers, that sort of thing?
Somewhat. I wasn't obsessed with them. I really liked numbers. I really loved watching the stock market pages in the paper when I was three or four. I loved all those fractions. You know, it's too bad about the decimals now. Right. The fractions were great. You'd sort of search, see if you could find a 64th or 128th or something really rare in the midst of all those numbers. And I loved baseball for the same reason. I used to sit and even as I remember back, I have a pretty good memory far back. I was four years old or so, I think, and I would listen to them and say, and think about streaks and think about what a 300 batter really meant. It was way deep in there.
We had an older son who loved doing that too, with reading the newspaper, baseball especially.
Baseball is...
And very quickly, at a young age, you could tell when a percentage was calculated incorrectly or something like that.
You get a feel for it.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it. And
very much so.
Yeah, and the announcers would say, you know, whether somebody was due or whether this or that. I'd say, well, what does that mean?
Yes.
So
how did that interface with what you were getting in school?
That's a great question. So I was lucky in that. So I have to say I was, you know, not surprisingly in this math world, but I was pretty quick when I was young. And so teachers heaped challenges and puzzles on me. And so since I was good at math, I got rewarded for that. So they pushed me along. And fortunately, it didn't push me in grades too much. I was on the cusp of two, and they pushed me ahead to the next one, which I almost wish in retrospect they hadn't.
Yes.
I could have handled the math. I could have entertained myself with the math, but the rest of it would have been nice to be with my peers. But so it was all complemented. You know, I think like anybody sensibly today does that. You know, they try to give kids challenges and keep them engaged with other things. There's always more to learn.
And did that happen through high school?
It did. I'm trying to think. I had because we moved a lot. It was complicated. I was pretty much straight along in the right system in junior high. Then we moved from a very good high school, New Trier High School, north of Chicago, where, you know, plenty of competition.
Yes.
I mean, you know, just 4,000 kids.
I mean,
some really smart kids there. We moved from there to Bradford, Pennsylvania, which was essentially Appalachia. And the systems were different, and so I was a year behind the smart kids in 10th grade. They were taking Algebra 2, and I hadn't had geometry yet, because the way New Trier worked, they were accelerating in a different way. So my dad and I puzzled about that, and the solution was to take both. So I took geometry and Algebra 2, and the Algebra 2 teacher actually taught at the local branch of University of Pittsburgh in Bradford as well, and he latched on to me early. used to give me things to do, and the geometry teacher let me teach the class sometimes, and he pushed me to. So it was great. So considering it was a high school in the middle of nowhere, you know, I had plenty of math that year.
Yes.
I mean, it was great. And then I decided, though, that two more years of that, I was going to run out of things to do, so I decided to go away to school to Lawrenceville.
Ah.
And again, met plenty of kids who are much smarter than I, so that was fine.
But the math education continued too through the.
Sure, I mean there was plenty, and the kids that had finished, there were kids in my class several years younger than I who were taking classes at Princeton.
Uh-huh.
So, right, it was clear that no matter what you wanted to do, there were courses to take.
So when you're making your college decision, was mathematics or something like that definitely in the picture?
Probably. Yeah, I thought, well, here's what was in the picture. So my dad said a couple things. He said I could go anywhere I wanted to go to college, but he would pay my way to Princeton.
Uh-huh.
And he was serious. Uh-huh. And then he said, and you can major in anything you want. He said, but if you want me to continue paying for it, it'll be engineering.
Uh-huh.
So there wasn't a lot of existential dilemma about what I was going to do.
Uh-huh.
The hard thing is when I did discover that I loved math, I had to be a double major. I had to get 2 degrees from Princeton, which was an interesting road, which they've since closed. They don't allow you to do that anymore, and probably for good reason. But I had to do all the engineering requirements, and I did all the AB requirements for math. So I took a lot of engineering and math.
In the usual 4 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of courses. And they overlapped in some sense,
yes.
But I didn't get to count them as...
Right.
Yeah, so it was a lot of courses.
But you're a statistician now, so there was a further transition along the way.
Well, yes. So what about that? So my engineering was really what we now call maybe systems engineering,
mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of 4 courses from Stu Hunter, who was a great statistician, and he was really my inspiration to go into statistics. And I took my first course from Stu sophomore year. Was in one of my engineering
mm-hmm.
courses, and then took more courses from him, and took operations research, and really took only the minimal requirements in traditional engineering,
uh-huh.
and then took the usual math sequence, and
right.
thinking until about junior year that I was going to go into math,
uh-huh.
but the job market and my talent combined to steer me towards statistics,
mm-hmm.
and at the time I thought, well, I'll do very theoretical statistics, thinking I was still a mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only about the second year of grad school when I
mm-hmm.
rediscovered my love of just data.
Uh-huh.
I loved data. And suddenly I came out of the closet and it was okay. My advisor, Percy
mm-hmm.
Diaconis, was fine
wow.
with that. And he said, that's a fine pursuit. And so...
So where were you at graduate school? You did
Stanford.
Princeton. Oh, you went to Stanford. Okay.
So I finished in 4 years, and I was the usual 21, and went right off to Stanford with
right.
no transition whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
Bad choice again. Started in the summer, essentially drove from Princeton in June to a week later starting graduate school. Gung-ho. Went about 2 years. Everything was going great. Passed my quals, passed my PhD orals. Was ready to start my dissertation, and I got derailed. I got severely derailed. I took a dance course,
oh.
which was fine. I really liked it. In fact, I took the dance course to stop thinking about my orals.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't figure out any other way to stop thinking about
mm-hmm.
the central limit theorem and other wonders. And then in the fall, noticed that I was taking about 8 hours a day of dance classes.
Uh-huh.
And sort of keeping up with my statistics courses, but they were clearly getting to be back burner. And
uh-huh.
then about a year later, I actually auditioned for a dance company and got in.
Oh.
And in the meantime, I guess it was my 4th year of grad school. I had taken a part-time job at the Center for Advanced Studies
uh-huh.
in Behavioral Sciences at Stanford
oh.
as statistical liaison, statistical resource for
mm-hmm.
the fellows.
Right.
A lot of social scientists.
Yeah.
So that was great. I mean, I had lots of interesting problems, and that seemed great. That was going to be a great way for me to segue
uh-huh.
finishing my thesis.
Right.
But then that December, I auditioned and got into a company, and so I had to go both to my advisor and to my boss and say, I just got a different job and I think I have to take it. And they were both wonderful, both of them. Carol Trainer was my boss at the center, and she said, well, she said, I said, the tour is only 3 months. So she said, well, you can just come back here after that 3 months, and that'll be great. I said, that's wonderful. And Percy, of course, who had been a performer himself, said, well, I hope it works out, and I never see you again. In a very nice way.
Yes.
But he said, I'm, if it doesn't, I'm always here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, wow. Couldn't have had a nicer, more supportive pair. So off I went.
So how long did that interlude?
About five years.
So it was more than just that one.
It did. I came back. I think I did resume my job at the center very briefly.
Yes.
And then decided my future wife, girlfriend at the time, graduated from Stanford, and she was a dancer, and we both decided to go off to Europe to seek our fortunes in dance. So off we went.
What kind of dance?
Modern dance.
Modern dance.
So the company I had gotten into was Tandy Beal and Company. Tandy is still performing. In fact, she's performing, she's about to turn 70, I believe, and she's she doesn't perform dance so much, but she has a circus, and she's on tour with Bobby McFerrin and Stevie Wonder and other people in the Far East right now. So, I mean, she was an amazing inspiration.
But you said it was for 5 years.
Well, so let's be accurate. I left in 78 when Sylvia graduated, and we went off to Europe, got jobs in Munich. Then a friend of ours who was in Paris started a company in Salt Lake City. So we went there, lived there a year and a half. That company moved to Philadelphia in September 1980. And at that time, I went over to the Wharton School, and I said, I need a part-time job. And a man by the name of Larry Mayer, who was in the Energy Center, Percy told me about him, he ran an energy center at the Wharton School. He had just fired a statistician engineer the day before I walked in. Instead of, I came in off the streets with this ABD from Stanford and wanted a 10-hour-a-week job. And he looked up at the heavens and said, 10 hours a week. He said, how about 80? And so we had this great long argument. I said I was a dancer. He said, I don't care what you do. He said, but I want the dog, not the tail. So I said, well, let's see how that goes. So I did work for him. I took the job, and really that was my segue back out of dance. I finished my master's degree in dance in the spring of 1980. So that was now 2 full years, and so I guess it was really only about another year till I was completely out of dance, so maybe three, four-year detour. And so now I'm at the Wharton School teaching on the research faculty and taking summers to go finish up at Stanford, finish my dissertation, and that took about another 5 summers.
What was your dissertation on?
Eventually it was on mixtures of linear regressions. Really a data analysis driven kind of thesis, which was, so I was Percy's first student to start at Stanford, but not his first to finish. In fact, it was nice when he went off to Harvard about 12 years after he started at Stanford. I had just finished, and I could, at the time, I could say I was his first and last student at Stanford. I think he had 12 or 13.
So you were at the Wharton School.
I was at the Wharton School.
Finish your degree.
I was at the Wharton School as a research faculty, and then a tenure track position opened up, and I got the job. So I was now tenure track at Wharton. Still hadn't quite finished, but I was getting closer. And about my end of my second year, I finished up, and at the same time, my friend Mike Steele, who was at Princeton, had invited me up for a talk, and then, unbeknownst to me, that was turning into a job interview, and he made me an offer, and so I went to Princeton in 86. Essentially started over, assistant professor in the engineering school. Statistics had closed 2 years before, and they were looking for people to make statistics work in engineering, and I thought, why not Dick DeVoe?
Yes.
It sort of seemed to make sense. And we gave it a valiant effort, but it didn't quite stick. So,
and the next transition?
Next transition was, I my position turned into a senior lecturer position at Princeton, which was going to be ongoing. I liked my teaching a lot. And that was going okay for a couple of years, and then I saw that the job notice for Williams. And at the time, this is 1990, fall of 93, and at that time, there was a lot of talk in the air about statisticians who were in liberal arts colleges and math departments and how cruel life was for them. And how you shouldn't really do this because the mathematicians are going to treat you badly and not respect what you do. And there was a whole conversation about this. But I read this ad, Ivers, and it was the most intelligent thing I had ever seen about what a statistician should do and what they were about. And I said, wow, who are these people? And so I called them up and I talked to Frank Morgan. And Frank sounded as good as the letter had sounded in the ad. And he showed me what they were doing and talked to me. And I was completely sold. I just said, okay, I'm coming. And of course, then I realized that there was an interview process and I didn't really have the job yet. But I said, this is clearly the right job for me. And so we went up a few months later for the interview, and rest, I guess, I've been there ever since.
Now, how do you balance the teaching part and the research part at a liberal arts college like that?
How do we do that? Well, everybody does it differently. Mm-hmm. Teaching is really pretty all-encompassing during the semester. It's very hard to do anything new. It's not so hard, especially this day and age, to keep things going with collaborators. Keep drafts circulating, talk on the phone, and that kind of stuff. And I do that with both research papers and more these days with textbooks. I have five textbooks that I'm working on, so we keep things going. But we have very intense semesters, but they're 12 weeks. So that leaves really plenty of time to do other things, to get back to whatever it is we're doing, research, writing, giving talks.
Now, clearly you enjoy the teaching part.
I love teaching.
The writing part?
It turns out I love writing. It surprised me.
You have five textbooks currently in the works.
Currently out.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Two or three more in the works. Five currently out.
And what are you looking toward? I mean, do you have specific projects and goals in mind as to where you want to go in your writing, books, and research?
Well, I really want to get what's happening in statistics out to the most people, as many people as possible. So that's what's exciting, is trying to get the excitement of statistics across to everyone. It's been frustrating to me that statistics is not understood, that people think of it. Just the conversation this happens every time I go somewhere, right? I mean, you go talk to somebody. I was after the restaurant last night, I was talking to people in the lounge, and somebody said, oh, statistics, you know, and you know what comes next. You know, it was my worst course. I hated that course. Oh my gosh, this and that. It's just terrible. We're trying to fix that. So that was probably the biggest motivation in writing these books, is just to get the joy of statistics across. The joy and the importance. You can't be a citizen in the 21st century without knowing what's going on with data.
You played some part in the development of the Math Awareness Month schemes and so on this time?
A little bit. Really an advisory role on helping to some advice on the poster and some of the themes.
Are you active within ASA, the American Statistical Association, with on public outreach and those kinds of things?
I'd like to become more so. I've been involved with the ASA for years in various capacities. I am currently running for office, so we'll see how that goes. See if I'll become more involved. I have been on the program committee, I think, a record 6 times. I actually was the program chair for Atlanta in 2001. It was a fun job. A lot of papers.
Yes.
To organize. But the people are great. I mean, it's really, it's really a wonderful job putting that together.
Just going back, for the research you're doing, or the kinds of, what kinds of topics are you looking at there? What's interesting you in that area?
My research has always been motivated by scientific problems. So the methodology that I've done is just problems that I couldn't solve with existing methods that a scientist posed to me. So unlike a lot of my colleagues, I don't go pushing methods for methods' sakes. I wait till a problem comes along and I need to find something.
So when you interact with colleagues of all sorts, you find out all kinds of interesting problems to pursue then.
Right. I mean, the biggest problems are, I think statistics traditionally and continues to be driven by science, especially now with big data.
Right.
And that's what's going to impact the route statistics research takes in the next 50 years. How we deal with that.
Now my usual closing question is, where do you see yourself, say, 5 or 10 years from now?
Where do I see myself? I see myself, the main thing I see myself doing is continuing to write books. I have several introductory textbooks out. I would like to get some more advanced textbooks out, and I'd like to get a book out, which I call my airport book, on data mining. I want to explain data mining and what the excitement, what the challenges, what the problems with data mining for society, and what it is, what it can't do, what it's doing, what people should know about it. I'm writing a paper for a law review, the Cooley Law Review, on what every lawyer should know about data mining. Not that I'm an expert in the law, but I think they ought to know some of the technical capabilities of it so that they know what it can and can't do. People have this very naive idea about what the term data mining can do.
Yes.
That, you know, that we can see everything that people are doing. And I think there needs to be more awareness of exactly what is going on so that people know what its limits are, but also know what its strengths are. So because it can be invasive.
Going back to your much earlier pursuit of dance, has that continued in your life in any way?
It did. I taught modern dance at Williams as a winter study course 4 or 5 times. We teach it. That's how I've been there about 18 years, and that's I think I've done it 5 times. But I retired last January. Uh-huh. Be the last time I'll teach modern dance.
Oh, okay.
There comes a time in every dancer's career when it's time to hang it up. So I thought, what am I going to do for winter study? Winter study is this great thing that we have at Williams, right? We teach a 3.5-week course in January that's on whatever we want. And my department, the math department at Williams, probably has the widest range of courses that any department teaches. And so I just fit into that perfectly. So I thought, what am I going to do next? And I just got this approved, so I can say it. I proposed a course called the History, Geography, and Economics of the Wines of France, a travel course. And it just got approved. So I'll be taking 10 kids over to France next January.
I'd love to go on that one.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
In terms of physical activity, I mean, dancing is a very physical kind of thing. Are you continuing that in other ways then? Or,
I always keep physically active.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. My kids, I had kids late, so I have to stay somewhat in shape for them. So, yeah, I still have a couple teenagers.
Right.
So. So I'm planning to bike across France again this summer. Done that a couple times.
Good. All right, unless there's something you want to add as a final statement.
No, it seems
a really interesting background of all of this. You were at Stanford at the Center for
Advanced Studies in Behavioral Sciences.
That's a building, sort of a modernistic building up on a hill in the back there. Yes.
Right.
My father-in-law was the accountant for the center.
Really?
For many, many years, yes.
No kidding.
Yes, he's retired since. He'd been active in Palo Alto politics and all that. My wife is from Palo Alto.
Okay.
I grew up there and went to the high school there and all this kind of thing. Connections that way. But one of my first visits was...
That's your father or your father-in-law?
My father-in-law.
Your father-in-law, right.
My father-in-law was visiting and seeing him just before his retirement.
So when did he retire?
It would have been about 20 years ago, I think.
Yeah, okay. So I probably was there. He probably signed my paychecks or something. Right?
I don't know what they did or whatever.
But
you were mentioning someone who was head of the...
Carol Trainor.
He may know her.
Yeah, I'm sure he knew her. I'm not sure what happened to Carol. Yeah, he would certainly know Carol. Carol was there for years.
Right.
Yeah, she was quite a character.
Uh-huh.
And what a great place. I mean, I didn't even know who these people were. I mean, I was 20-something, and this was my part-time job. And I would have lunch with Alfred Kazin and Maggie Scharf and all these intellectuals around the lunch table and just be amazed by the conversation.
Yes.
And what's really interesting is that, you know, I got to know them a bit, and then when I got the dance offer, it was very interesting to see different people's reaction.
Uh-huh.
Like either absolute joy in this or horror, depending on their own view about this thing. Like, really, you're gonna leave to go do this? Other people said, isn't that fantastic? And it was just fascinating to see that split.
Mm-hmm.
It's about 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Good. Well, I think that covers what I wanted to get.
Great.